What really happens to us after we die? Well, there are many theories that have emerged over the centuries as an attempt to answer that mystery. If we go all the way back to the 5th century BC, the great Greek philosopher Socrates spoke about the immortality of the soul. He says that there is an immaterial part of you, your soul, and at death, he said, that part of you separates from the body and it goes on and lives in some kind of afterlife. Plato, who followed in the footsteps of Socrates, he had similar ideas. He spoke about the soul being trapped in the body until the body dies. And then the souls, at least the souls of the virtuous, they escape the body and they live in this state of pure being. Plato says they contemplate eternal truths, whatever that means. Then there were some philosophers who proposed that regardless of how we live, when we die, our soul enters this realm that they called Hades, which is a kind of underworld, a place of the dead, an experience of shadows and darkness. Then some groups in the Jewish religion, they had a very similar belief in this idea of Hades, but they called it Sheol, and we see it come up a number of times in the Old Testament. Not necessarily a place of punishment, but again, it was understood as dark, lifeless, no joy there. Then there were other Jewish groups, like the Pharisees, and they believed that not only does the soul live on, but on the last day, even the bodies of the righteous will rise again. There were many ideas, many theories about life after death. Some were quite similar to each other and some quite contradictory. But then came Jesus of Nazareth to answer this mystery once and for all. After he was crucified, the people expected that he would remain dead, because that's what dead people do, right? They remain dead. But in his death, he discovered a whole new, transcendent, glorious life beyond the physical realm and beyond what all those before him had imagined. Jesus didn't philosophize about it. He didn't just teach about it. He demonstrated for us our destination. He embodied it. We reminded that today in the gospel. He appears to his apostles and he says, touch me. Look, see, a ghost or, you know, an immaterial kind of spirit doesn't have flesh and bones like I do. It can't eat fish like I'm about to. Through his rising from the dead, Jesus assures us that not only does our soul live on, but in time, it will also be given a new and glorified body. And some of you are probably thinking, thank God for that. I'm tired of my body. If Jesus had not risen from the dead, life's biggest mystery would have remained unexplained, or at least confined to theories and ideas. If this is all true, if the tomb of Jesus really is empty, if God really did become human and conquer our death, then it has all kinds of significant implications for our lives here and now. And that's the focus of our reflections during these weeks of Easter. What the empty tomb means for our lives. Last week, Father Justin spoke about how the empty tomb assures us that God's forgiveness is limitless. And that means that we can live now as if love always has the final word, regardless of our mess. Love always has the final word. We can live now with true peace in the midst of all our messiness. This week, I want to reflect on how the empty tomb reveals to us the power of compassion. Easter only happened because of God's compassion, because God was willing to enter right into the nitty-gritty of our lives because he was willing to fully experience our humanity, to bear our burden, compassion. I'm going to be talking a lot today about compassion. Biblical compassion is two things. Firstly, it's a deep feeling of sympathy and sorrow for the suffering of others. But it's also a desire to want to help to alleviate that suffering. Compassion is both heart and its action. And the great example of this compassion was Jesus on the cross, yeah? Alleviating our suffering through his wounds, but at the same time, feeling for his people. Remember his words? Forgive them, Father, for they know not what they do. Compassion. We see another example of his compassion today in our first reading. Peter is preaching boldly in the public square after Pentecost. He's trying to convert the hearts of the people, right? But he starts by accusing them of killing Jesus. I don't know what his strategy was exactly, but anyway, he started there. You murdered him, the Holy One. You killed him. But then his emphasis suddenly shifts. And he says, but I know, brothers, that neither you nor your leaders had any idea what you were really doing. You hear the compassion? They'd messed up pretty remarkably. They'd killed the Son of God. That's kind of up there, right? But Peter shows them compassion, understanding. No doubt the same compassion he himself received from Jesus in his own failure, yeah? Not too long before that. Peter could give it because he'd received it. One of the key Hebrew words in the Old Testament that's used to describe God is hesed. And hesed is a word used to describe a love that is both faithful and compassionate. And there's one point in the Old Testament where God's speaking to Moses, and he says to Moses, I am full of hesed. That's who I am. That's my heart. The psalmist also knew this. He said that the Lord is full, is gracious and full of compassion. Compassion is one of the key attributes of God. Okay? You get it? God is relentlessly compassionate because that's his heart. That's who he is. That's point one. Now, why is this important for us to know? Well, because it means that if God is always compassionate towards us, we can and we should be compassionate towards ourselves. I want you to consider this parable. There was a man who was treated unfairly and he was really upset and angry. He was furious, right? He didn't know what to do, so he calls some of his best mates just to kind of vent, to explain what was going on. And his first friend replies by saying, oh, you know what you need? There's a great new book on anger management. You should read it. It'll help you, all right? He wasn't really happy with that, so he calls another friend. And the second friend says, oh, don't worry about it, mate. You know, some things you just can't change. Anyway, did you watch the game on Sunday? Wasn't it good? Wasn't really happy with that response either, so he calls a third mate. And that friend says, hey, what are you doing for dinner? Let's catch up and chat about it. Which of the three friends showed compassion? Which of the three friends would you like to be? The third friend, yeah? Yes? No? Maybe? Most of us probably are that way towards our friends most of the time, I would think. We're gentle, aren't we? We're understanding. We're patient towards them. Even when they're kind of like messed up, we just have this way of holding those that we love. But when it comes to ourselves, it can be a very different story. Sometimes we're not such good friends to ourselves, are we? We are often our harshest critic. We can be quick to judge and condemn ourselves. We might give others some slack, but we expect ourselves to be perfect. Yeah? We forget that just like those who killed Jesus, we do not fully know what we are doing. We forget that there are various pressures in our lives that impede our better judgment at times, that there are unconscious forces at work within us that influence our thoughts, our behaviours, that we are not always fully free. And God, of course, knows this. He knows the full picture of our lives. He knows why we are the way we are. But the problem is that when we are too harsh on ourselves, God's compassion cannot get through because we block it. We block it with our self-criticism, with our judgment. Our lack of self-compassion is perhaps one of the biggest obstacles to God. But when we do follow God's lead, when we do look at our weakness and our failures with compassion, we open the door to the compassion of God. In a way, we kind of minister to ourselves God's compassion. So important, so powerful. If the tomb of Jesus really is empty, it means that you can and you should treat yourself with compassion. So I want to encourage you to make that your priority in these days of Easter. I want you to practice. You need to practice it, right? Practice being kind, understanding, patient towards yourself, especially when it comes to the messy parts of your life. I'm guessing some of us here are probably reacting to this message today because you're so used to being critical and strict towards yourself and you think that's the only way to change. If there's something not right, if you're failing, if there's a weakness, oh, I've got to be tough with myself. So this idea of compassion might think, oh, God, no, that's weak. That's a bit too forgiving or something. What kind of school is Father Dan coming from? But I want to argue that the compassion approach is much more effective than the strict task approach because it enables us to be more honest with ourselves, and it's that honesty that opens the door to the transforming power of God. We cannot change ourselves. Only the grace of God can change us. And that grace is always close to us when we're living in truth, when we're real. God is always close to truth, even when it's messy truth. So I want to suggest today that you choose one situation, one area of your life where you are somewhat disappointed in yourself. Maybe it's a failure, a regret, some kind of weakness you're aware of. I want you to spend some time this week reflecting on that situation with compassion. It can really help to journal as you do this. Don't judge that issue. Don't label it. Just try and patiently understand what's going on deep down. What's underneath that behaviour or that way of thinking? What might be causing me to think or behave in that way? Pay attention to all your feelings. Listen to what they might be trying to tell you. Treat that issue with the same sensitivity and care you would if you were sitting with your best friend. I want to encourage you to do this practice often. The more compassion you show yourself, the more you will open yourself to the compassion of God. The same compassion that conquered death and emptied the tomb.